stationed, wherever I was stationed for the next, what, 20 years, I guess, I had to carry a weapon with me at all.
What was, like, your first duty at the station when you first got there?
Oh, boy. Okay.
If you're comfortable.
Let me get my breath, okay?
Okay.
This is a little bit difficult. Because we kind of not talk about this too much, but... Okay. It took me 18 hours flying straight to land in Saigon, Vietnam. Got off the aircraft, and the first thing that hit me was the humidity and heat. Walking from the aircraft to the orderly room to report in, walking down the street, it looked like Dodge City in the Old West. Men were walking with rifles, pistols, with their hats on. We call it the bomb hats. And I felt like I was back in the Western, to be honest with you, scared to death. Reported in. They told me to go down to the report where they assigned me a bed in what they call Tent City, which was on kind of like the outskirts of the base. There was about 24 tents. And I don't know how many tents, so there was a lot of tents, including showers. There was four men to a tent. And I walked from the orderly room over to the tent, and as I was crossing the street from the orderly room over to the other side, there was a ditch. And I said, well, I just want to go across the bridge. Started walking from the bridge, and all of a sudden, I looked up in the sky, and there's a plane coming down shooting. I dived into the ditch and laid there, scared to death. I'm not going to detail it, but the whole time I was there, we were hit by the Viet Cong five times. It's terrible that you should have gone and know that you'd killed somebody. Sorry. But we had to do it. I hope that helps a little bit.
Yeah.
I spent 18 months over there. The whole time I was... The 18 months being there was only out of the communication center where we worked at. There was only four of us cryptographers. And they would send us out what we call temporary duty, which is TDY. Temporary duty to other areas within Vietnam to teach the ground forces how to operate what we call field crypto machines. And I went to four or five different areas there. The areas, I have befriended some army people in Saigon, and they got stationed in a town named Bang. And I happened, why I don't know, but I happened to be there at the time training, and we were hit. Four of my buddies were killed right in front of me.
Back in the Vietnam era, obviously there wasn't computers and stuff like that that cryptologists might use today. So how was the process of decoding messages different than how it would be like today?
Oh, if I understood you correctly, okay? You want to know what was it? All right. To begin with, in cryptography, back in 1956, we had a machine where, like a typewriter, and we would type whatever message it was, and the machine next to it was a machine, we called it a K, and I'm not giving any information, classified information out, because the machine was a KL-7, and it operated by disks. They had disks with letters on them, and there was six disks in this machine. And if you typed an A, it would come out a P. And when the burst, and when the tape, because it came out in a tape-wise, and we got to the point to where we could take our fingers and go through the tape, and we could read the tape, but that's another story. But then when that tape was sent to the other person to decrypt, he would put the P, type the P, and it would come out the A. That's how we would do it. I happened, of course, through the years, it changed and so on. And I happened to go to my last station, military station at Davis, MacDill Air Force Base in Florida, what was it called, the Joint they use this card once a day, 24 hours, throughout the military. The same card, same information, and it's changed every day.
Well, Ken, did you feel like you were good at numbers? You must have gravitated towards that for a reason, or did they just tell you to go that route? Or tell us a little bit more about your skill set.
Okay, I don't like patting myself on the back, but when I left teletype school at Fancy Warren, it was the first time that, you know, I touched a typewriter. I came out on top of my class, and they gave me my first stripe. Throughout the years and everything else, when I retired, I applied to the telephone company to get a job because I had a family. And I approached, well, blah, 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 said, yeah, we need somebody as a person of types. I said, well, I think I can do that. And I went and did the test, walked out, and she says, I think we're going to deuse you. She says, how about reporting Monday morning? And I said, you know, what happened? She says, well, she says, this is very unusual. She says, you typed 120 words without a mistake. That was my fast speed.
That's really good. What, when you talk about codes and such in Vietnam, tell the students a little bit about maybe some of the aerial reconnaissance and some of the challenges in Vietnam from an Air Force perspective.
Well, in the field, when we would go out to the field, and they would send their messages back to us. See, we were connected to Washington, D.C., to the Joint Chiefs of Staff office, okay? And as far as the aircraft, what you said, they would send the information to Saigon, and Saigon, we would send it directly to the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Washington. A lot of the information, I still can't talk about, I'll put it that way.
Yep.
I understand that.
Yep.
But it was information that the Joint Chiefs needed, and that's what we would do. We would send it, they would send it coded to us, and we would uncode it and send it directly to Jason, the joints.
Sure.
You're talking about what the job is concerned. It might be interesting to the boys is that I was stationed at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois, and the President of the United States, when they flew to California, had to land at Scott Air Force Base to refuel. And there was the sergeant and myself, we had to go out to Air Force One, take the crypto machine out of the aircraft, bring it back to the vault, and just before the president took off, we had to take the same machine back and put it back in the aircraft. And I had the honor of meeting three of the presidents.
So at the end of your service, when you went back home, how was it like? Was there someone to greet you or something like that?
Young man, I want to tell you one little secret. I spent 13 years in Europe, and I say 18 months in Vietnam. Every time I came back to the United States, I practically kissed the ground. People meeting me? Yes and no. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. It depended on where I was coming in. But most of the time, yes, the family would meet me. When I came back from Vietnam, I was desecrated when I came back from Vietnam because the meeting that I had in Vietnam, I don't know if it's interesting to you or not, but my meeting came in off the aircraft and we had to travel in full uniform and we traveled by civilian aircraft coming back from Saigon. And I was walking down the Concorde to go down to my other aircraft going down, to take off to go back to family. I was walking down the Concorde, two young men and a young lady walking towards me, and I didn't pay much attention until they got within about 10 feet, and all of a sudden they drew guns and shot me. And it was water pistol with red dye, and I wound up with red dye all over my uniform. I was taken back, I guess. It was why? I guess my question was why.
Did you join any veteran organizations? And if you did, why?
I joined the Veterans of Foreign War, the VFW, because I'm a veteran of Vietnam. And the reason I did that is, guys, I have to admit to all of you, military up to at least 5 years after retirement. If it hadn't been for my wife, I could not today sit here and talk to you. And the reason I couldn't is because I was still talking military, and it wasn't for her, you know, getting me back to speaking civilian. In other words, it was difficult for me to make the transition from military thinking and military talking to what we, you know, civilian.
Could you tell us some of the interactions you had with the Hmong Army?
Oh, the Hmong Army?
Yes.
Great people. Great people. They were our, along with our military police, they were also the guards of the base. And in fact, I became friendly with one of the Hmong family there. We'd sit down and eat with them and talk with them. Great people. Oh, thankful, I guess, the best word, to have us there. And they would help us in any way that they could possibly help us.
In the Hmong Army, I heard that there was, like, younger people, like, little kids in the Hmong Army. And, like, what was that like?
Yes, they did have young people. They had young people at the age of about 15. They were more or less home army. They stayed right in their little areas where they lived at. They didn't go out in the fields like, you know, like the soldiers did. The men were gone. They were the ones that protected the town. Of course, we were there in Saigon, but at Da Nang and Pleiku and Benoit and places like that, they were the home front soldiers, I guess you put it that way. They were just as good a shot as we were, to be honest with you.